Hi everyone, my name is Amandine Flax and welcome to a new episode of Entrepreneurs Playing Games podcast edition. Every 2 weeks I host a live video stream where I deep dive into startup founders' journey after playing video games with my guest. Here is the audio version of our discussion. If you are interested in the full video, be sure to check out and follow my YouTube channel at youtube.com/AmandineFlax. And for any questions, suggestions, or just to say hi, you can find me on Twitter at AmandineFlax or at EntrepreneursPG. In today's episode, I am joined by Leona, founder and CEO of Readly. So Leona, can you start by walking us through what is Readly, what you're working on, what you're building right now?
Okay, sure. So Readly is basically a tool that you can use to understand your financial options, to basically be your own financial advisor, but for free. So it's not going to be telling you what to do, but it's going to be allowing you to find the right things for you in a way that you can understand. Because I'm very aware that a lot of financial products, even things like the FT, are really quite complicated. And even I don't like reading the FT. It's got a lot of words, a lot of numbers, a lot of charts. It's quite confusing. And it's not that complicated, really. So I want to help make it more accessible and understandable, because a lot of us have these products, be it pensions or savings products, and yet most of us don't know what's in them, what's best for us, which one performs best, how we should manage our finances. So that's what we want to do. We just want to make it simple, understandable and accessible for everyone in a super easy way. So no jargon and just really understandable things.
That's a super cool mission. So on your website, you're actually talking about jargon, and on your website, when you have a look, you actually see the name REIT all the time. So what it is would be interesting to know more about, because I'm a bit lost on this front.
Okay.
And also, I'm very curious to understand why you decided to start with this specifically.
Yeah. Okay, this is a question I get asked a lot. So firstly, a REIT is a real estate investment trust, which means that what that is it's a company that's set up to essentially be like a big buy-to-let landlord. So it buys properties and rents them out, takes that rent and gives it back to the shareholders.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
So imagine if you're just a big buy-to-let landlord, that's all it is, except the great thing about it is it's tax-free. It's got this lovely tax wrapper around it that means as long as it follows the rules set out by the tax man, then it doesn't have to pay any tax on the money that it collects. And then it gives it out to the shareholders in the form of dividends, which are then dealt with at an individual level.
Okay.
So.
And why did you decide to start with this specifically? Because you mentioned that you want to
tackle everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. So because we're a startup, we've obviously got limited resources, and you've got to sort of pick your battles.
Yeah.
And the thing is, most people can get their head around the concept of being a buy-to-let landlord. It's quite aspirational for most people to own a property.
Mm-hmm.
People love owning property. I think about 60% of adults in this country own property, so it's quite popular in terms of an investment vehicle. And then we thought, okay, the stock market's quite scary.
Yeah.
It's inappropriate for a lot of people in terms of, like, there can be quite risky things on there. And if you don't know what you're doing, you're quite at risk. So we thought, okay, what's the thing that most people can identify with? And it was that home ownership thing. And knowing what I know as an accountant about the tax situation, also it gives the benefits of the property market. So mm-hmm. when the housing market goes up, guess what? The value of the REITs goes up too. So it's quite nice in that way. It also has regular income that it pays out every, at least once per year, but most of them pay out every 3 months.
Okay.
So it's got a nice, ready, steady income for everybody who invests in it. And it's just that entry point. Also, the key thing is a lot of pensions own REITs because of those great benefits. So you most probably own a REIT.
But you just don't know about it. Okay.
You just don't know you do. So we thought we would start in the sort of shallow end, shall we say, of finance pool, and go in with the property.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't own property, if you are a young person in London, you can probably never afford to buy a flat. But this is a way to get on board and to understand your options in terms of owning property. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is right for you to have a REIT, maybe it's not. But at least know your options.
Yeah, you need to first understand what it is before understanding or before taking any decisions. Right? Yeah. It's interesting because I've recently, for the entire year of 2019, I've seen so many startups trying to tackle different areas of financial wellness. And I'm actually wondering why that. Is this that people are looking for more control on their own money and investment? Does it come from the corporation that maybe are now ready to work with smaller companies and are more open to collaboration and are ready to, you know, innovate? Do you know where this comes from? Why suddenly so many people are looking at financial wellness?
Yeah, I think it's a multitude of factors. Certainly the ones that you mentioned, you know, the open banking mm-hmm. Has been fantastic in terms of allowing the startups to come through and work together. But for us personally, it came from understanding people around me and their mm-hmm. personal struggles. And when you see somebody that you're very close to struggling with not knowing what happened, losing money because they made bad decisions or they didn't know what they could do, you sort of think, well, it's not that difficult. Why can they not just have the tools that say I would have, and then they'd understand it?
Yeah.
And sure, I'm not suggesting everybody goes out and trains as an accountant, because that's kind of boring for everyone. But, you know, I also worked as a city analyst, so I understand the financial markets from that side too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that difficult. So I just wanted to make it more simple, and also transparency is a big driver for us, because I think a lot of things are made complicated when they don't need to be.
Completely agree with that, yes.
And nobody ever knows what it's all like smoke and mirrors, isn't it? What on earth is in our pension fund? Apparently they checked on some doctors and they were investing in tobacco companies. Like okay. Cancer research doctors, and they had no clue because nobody knows what's inside those things.
That is crazy.
So yeah, so we wanted to help bring some transparency to people's lives. And if you are not one of those super lucky few who can have a financial advisor, who have all of that at their fingertips, what do you have? We have us. Hurrah!
That's great. And I think you're making a great point on the fact that, you know, you can do some research, but everything is made to look complex, so mm-hmm. you don't really want to dive into it. Once you take the time to actually look at this specific bit, and then you move on to the next one, and then you start understanding that, well, actually, it's not that hard, but it's just that you have so many words that you don't know, so many complexity that could be removed in some way, that makes the entire process just impossible. And if you don't have a certain motivation to just deep dive into it, then you actually never do it. You're just like, well, that's something financial complex there somewhere.
Yeah. And what we're aiming to do is to give you different levels. So if you do want to jump in, we're going to have the information there for you to go through the financial statements and to do all of these things. Yeah. But most people don't want to. Most people would just like a sort of apples to apples comparison mm-hmm. of what's right for me, what could I be getting, and what would that mean? You know, this might be slightly more money, but mm-hmm. it comes with more risk. Is that right for me? Maybe not.
Yeah.
And just give them that sort of simple, straightforward apples to apples comparison. And that's what we're trying to do, to make it, because let's face it, we all need money. We all have to use money, whether we like it or not. And we all have to live life and deal with money in the future. Yes. So. Yeah.
And you never have enough money. I mean, even if you feel that you're quite secured at some point, you know that it may be temporary, or you want to be safer for the future, or whatever you want to do, but there is always something. You always want to think, well, maybe I have now a little bit, but how do I get more? How do I reinvest that? And when you look online, it's, you have lots of things, but it's actually maybe not the best choices.
There's a lot of things that would be, you know, quite inappropriate for a lot of people. You know, there are products out there that you can go and start trading on the stock market and very risky things, and it might look like they're making lots of money, but it might only just be yesterday they made a little bit of money and tomorrow they're going to lose tons.
Yeah.
So it's always best to think in the same way that each of us is individual and we want to have our individuality, you know, thought of when we're taking all sorts of lifestyle choices. And yet we all seem to want to just think that we're just in one box when it comes to money, which we're not. Each of us has different long-term hopes and dreams and plans and things like that.
Do you feel like people now are slightly more aware of the different options, or at least aware that there are different options now than before? Do you feel that people are ready to maybe look further at what they can do? Or is it just that I meet lots of entrepreneurs and so they have to be aware of the financial aspect more than the usual people?
No, I think people are becoming more aware. I think the fact that, you know, we're all getting workplace pensions now, or at least those of us who have nice, safe employment.
Yes. So not us.
Yes, not
okay.
us.
Okay.
But everybody who's like properly employed gets a workplace pension. And then there is the great big question of when you move jobs and you've got loads of these workplace pensions. And what do you do with them? Do you put them together? In which one? Oh, the questions. Is it worth it? Should I opt out? So many different things. So there's people are starting to become more aware of that. There's also the fact that more and more people can't buy their own home.
Yes.
And they're thinking about longer term, about what they want, you know, family planning or future planning or retirement planning or whatever. They just need to, they need to be more aware. And it's becoming more into consciousness with that whole, I can't buy a house, and, you know, putting things in my bank account. Bank accounts, you know, a standard current account doesn't really pay any interest.
No.
So you've got to try and look a bit harder to make your money work for you. It used to be easy, but yeah, now we've got to, I think people are becoming more aware of it.
We now got a better understanding of what you're working on and what Readly is with the first part of the interview. And I also did some research on Readly, and what I found super fascinating is your business model. You mentioned earlier that the platform is free and you really want to keep it free for the end users. And so when we hear that, generally you kind of wonder, so where does the money come from? Who are you keeping the company viable? And I think it's people are more and more transparent on the business model, and people are also more and more aware that if you don't get the business model, there is something really weird about it. So can you tell us more about that? Because I find your business model quite interesting.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, obviously our key motivation was to sort of serve those parts of the market that are underserved.
Mm-hmm.
So those people who aren't sort of mega rich. And we felt that if we start charging the user, that they just wouldn't access it. Even if we charge them a small amount, you know, if you've only got sort of £100 to invest, you're not going to want to pay me £10. So we had to try and think of those people, and those are the people that we want to help.
Mm-hmm.
So we obviously do have to make money. And what we're going to do is to take the preferences of the users, fully anonymize everything. So no personal information will ever be shared, but we will take anonymized grouped preferences. So say like women between the age of 25 and 30 would like products that are more ethically focused, or they want higher returns, or they are willing to compromise in this, or they really want companies or products which focus on their local area and giving back. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to take that data, sell it to financial providers, so be it savings accounts, banks, pension providers, that kind of thing, and say, this is what people want.
Mm-hmm.
Now pay us for this insight, please. And yeah, I think the key thing to stress is we'll never sell personal data.
Okay.
And so it's never going to be, you know, Leona from London. It's always going to be just user groups and big swathes of user sets that we take that data and monetize that.
Mm-hmm.
But the we aim to keep it free for the user.
And who's buying those data?
So it'll be the sort of big financial institutions who've got lots of money, and quite frankly, they can afford to pay for it.
Yes. Have you already started talking about this business model to those bigger companies already? And are they familiar with this model? Because selling data has been done for quite some time, and now it's kind of more popular, or just more transparent, because people start understanding then when you don't pay for something, that you are the product, and it's about your data being sold to someone.
Yeah.
But I feel that this is a model that might have been in place for quite some time. So for the people you're talking to, is it something new? You have to educate them on this? Or is it something they're already used to and they're completely fine and looking for this type of data anyway?
I think the sort of financial institutions are completely aware of the way it works. What they like about what we are looking at is because nobody talks to the people that we're talking to. Okay. Nobody talks to the small savers. You know, they have all the data on the mega wealthy because they're already their clients. But nobody asks the everyday person what they want or what they think. They're just sort of lumped into this bucket and said, here's a product, take it, instead of actually seeing what they want or need. So that's what's unique about us, is that we're tackling different users, and the banks are really interested in to see how they can better serve that big swathe of population.
Okay, but so that means that it is something they already, you don't have to battle.
No.
For them for
yeah me. I think okay. I think in this day and age everybody understands that kind of concept of you know, behavioral data and things like that, so be it. We're all pretty used to having free products. Everybody loves a free product, be it, you know, Google or whatever, and we know that what we're doing on there, you know, we don't have free email for nothing. So yeah, it's something that's been around and it's quite understood, I think.
Okay, yeah, I completely agree, and what is free is always better, right? You're always looking for an alternative that may be free, and but I think people also want to have the insurance today that their data is anonymized, or they're not going to receive specific calls or emails from companies or anything.
Never.
So I think that's great to be transparent, and I think that's where we're going to go in the coming years, more transparency. Yeah.
I think personally, I care a lot about my personal data. And I think if I care that strongly about receiving cold calls or my data being sold, personal data, then I should assume that everybody feels that way. So I really feel strongly that we won't do that. It's the wrong thing to do.
And for the end user's perspective, if people are browsing on your website, the different and looking at the different option, how does this work for them? Is there any financial check or any approval you need to get before being able to use your platform? Is there anything that need to be vetted, or I don't know? Is there anything end users need to take in consideration before using your platform?
Sure. So our platform, we don't do any background checks on you. We take the minimum amount of data that we can. So we don't ask you know, your shoe size and what did you eat for breakfast. We just ask the minimum that we need in order to create a profile. And our site is more about, we're like a big data aggregator. So you can learn on there, you can watch our little tutorials, you can understand what things mean, and then you can start comparing the products. And we've put in some different tools that are not available other places, because we want to show people in a way that they can understand. So showing you a ticker tape on the stock market means nothing to most people. But if I can show you very easily the business model, then you get it. And so that's our starting point. Was we thought, okay, so there's a REIT on the market which has Amazon distribution hubs all along the motorway, big warehouses, and there is a REIT which has high street shopping centres. Now, if I said to anybody, or anybody sort of under the age of 40, which one do you think performs better? They all understand which one and why.
Yeah.
They all say, like, okay, shopping's gone online, I do everything, I buy everything from Amazon online and whatever. And so those warehouses will probably have, especially on the motorway, and when you see it on a map with a picture and what they do, it makes sense. that's where we started from and thought, let's show the business model so that people can use their common sense, their own local knowledge, and apply that to picking a financial product. Because everybody has a lot of common sense. You know, normally, most people have a lot of common sense. Okay, there are exceptions, but, you know, there are expensive financial services for those people who don't have any common sense.
Right.
But yeah, we're just giving you the option. So because we're not, we don't take anybody's money, so you can't give us your money, you can't invest, you don't deposit any money on our site. We're helping you to show you what might be right for you, and then you can go off and buy it with that provider.
Okay.
But it's, you're not, we're not taking your money, we're not going to manage your money, there's no downside to using us in that respect. Okay. Literally, go on, use us, what's the worst that can happen?
You're just offering the different option and showing
exactly
what can be possible. Okay.
Exactly. And later stage, we're also building, well, we're actually building right now, that's soon to be released, the functionality to put all your products in one place and actually see where you stand to be able to compare the products, apples to apples. So, okay, you've got a savings account, you've got an ISA, you've got three pensions, and you've got this sitting in cash, and you've got a little bit of property investment. Where does that actually mean you stand? How much do you have? What's it worth in the future? What's it doing for you now? And what could you be doing in the market? Like, what could you benchmark against? So we're hoping to release that functionality quite shortly. And I think that's a really cool tool. And again, that's totally free. So why wouldn't you want to know where you stand?
Exactly.
So
you also mentioned earlier that you want to you want to have REITs, but also other kind of product on your platform and address a wider audience, really. But I'm wondering, how does this work? What is your plan to reach out to your end users and to a broader audience that may not know? Like today, you are focusing on REITs, but what if people don't know about it and could benefit from this type of information? They are still part of your target audience, but they are not necessarily looking online for REITs because they don't know about it. How do you plan to reach out to these people?
So we are trying our best to be very cunning with our marketing, and we are trying to use a combination of social media and word of mouth, and we're doing some in-person workshops where I help people understand things. So we're currently a bit low budget, really.
Startup life,
yeah. And then we're going to go through sort of traditional marketing routes a bit later.
Okay.
But we are trying to, we found actually the word of mouth to be the most powerful tool in gaining new users.
Mm-hmm.
Especially off the back of especially when there's a lot of interaction. So in the early days of startups, there's always a lot of hands-on.
Yes.
So when I meet with some test users or something like that, or do some testing with people, and I explain things to them, and it clicks for them and they get it, and then they go off into the world and they start telling people. And then you get all of these other people coming to you and saying like, oh, you know, I tried it, I heard about it, or I found it posted in different forums. And that's actually been the best form of marketing that we've had so far, is people are really finding it, you know. Yes, it doesn't have all the functionality yet, but we're working on it. And as long as you're, you know, if you're looking for startups, you know it's not got all the functionality. You know that.
Yes.
That's always in development.
But they also know that the feedback also matters.
Yeah, exactly. So you can jump on the chat function in the website.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell us your feedback. You can email us, whatever. And we are still developing all the time. So please tell us what you think. We're happy to solve your problems.
Right now, is the platform already open for anyone to register and start browsing?
Okay, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Please register. Yes. Please start browsing. Please help play.
I'll make sure to add in the chat at the end of the interview the link to Readly website, and also I'll put it in the description of the video once it's on YouTube. Lisa, thank you for watching. Lisa is saying that you are really connected with the consumers, what the consumers are needing and what is lacking in the market. She said that this really inspires people to get back in charge of their finances, and she finds this fascinating. So I'm really glad that, I remember when we first met, that's exactly what I thought. I remember you explained your objective and what you were trying to build. It was at least 6 months ago, I think it was over the summer.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, that's super cool. That's something that people don't necessarily look for, or they don't know where to start. And that's a super cool objective and goal for the future.
Yeah, that was when we were just starting. So yes. Back in our very early vision days. I think it is something that's really important. I think also what mattered to Alfonso and I, my co-founder, is that we do something that we are actually proud of. And there are ways of commercializing it, sure. We're not running a charity here, but we're proud to say that we are building something that helps the people that currently have limited ways of finding out this information.
Yes.
And we're having a positive impact on those people's lives, which is something that's really important to us personally.
You started the company less than a year ago. You mentioned when we've met, it was still very early days. But still, when you, I think it may be mentioned on your website, maybe not, but you managed to have a partnership with a larger company, right?
Yes.
How did you, can we talk a bit about that, or is it sensitive information?
A little bit.
Okay, so that's just really cool just to mention that
You
managed to get a bigger player to talk to them.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for that without disclosing anything, just for people who are looking to talk to bigger actors
sure.
in the space they are? Well, they're still very small, because you know, when you're less than a year old, you think, oh, I can't talk to these people because they're really big and they may be in a different part of the world, or even in your country, and you think, how do I talk to them?
Yeah, so with that, it was a little bit of perseverance and self-belief and a little bit of insanity, perhaps. I don't know. I think the way I went about it was I identified what would be the right people to talk to in terms of our ethics, our morals, what aligned with our business. So not just look at who's really rich or who's really famous, but who aligns with what we're trying to do. And then I set about following them on everything, seeing how they interact with people, tracking down who works for them, seeing if I could meet them. And I didn't know anybody. I'm not very good at being connected with important people. I'm not, you know, I've got a lot of great, amazing, cool people in my network, but just not the ones that I needed at that moment.
You never have the people you need. You always need to develop a network just for someone specifically or for a company. Yeah.
So for that, I just went through every single mode of connection that I could. So I tried finding people on LinkedIn and not just spamming them with "I'd like to join your network," which is really annoying.
Oh, don't do that. If anyone adds us or anyone else on LinkedIn, don't just put the usual message. Explain why you want to connect.
Yes. It's really helpful.
Yes.
So when I would message them, I would say, "I'd really like to talk to you because I'm working on this, and you know, I'd really like to talk to you. I'd like to get your advice. I'd like to work with you on this." And you'd be really surprised how quickly people come back and say, actually, that sounds really interesting. Let's talk.
Yeah.
And that's how I did it. I was just very open with what I wanted, what I was trying to do, and just asked them.
I think, you know, you mentioned that so many people are just putting the message on LinkedIn or just saying, oh, I want to connect because I want to connect, basically. And it's so annoying when you see something different, you actually hit the accept button because you want to hear more, because, well, it's not spam for once. So you're like, oh, someone wants to connect and use the platform in a good way.
Yeah.
Let's give it a try.
Yeah. When, you know, it's like if anybody asks you for help, you always want to help them.
Yes.
Because if somebody says, hey, can I ask you advice? Or, hey, can I want you to help me with this or whatever. You're always like, yeah, sure, I'll help you.
Mm.
But if somebody is just like, connect. It's a bit.
Or just doesn't precise why they need to reach out to you, why they need your help, why there is a connection between what they're doing and what you're doing.
Yeah.
Other than, oh, accept me and then I'll send you my price list about my services.
And, yeah. Or even worse, I just want to have like hundreds of connections so I can look really important.
That's so bad. I know, that's really bad practices. So what are your next big step now for the coming months? Do you have any specific milestones, or you mentioned that the platform is already live, so anyone can just register and start using weekly. So what are the big next milestones for the coming year?
We're creating the personalized dashboard where you can put all your products on, see where you stand, understand them in, and this is going to be totally very visual and very simple to understand. So there's not going to be loads of charts and graphs everywhere. It's going to be very simple, very straightforward, so that everybody can understand it and get their financial position straight off. And that's coming up very soon. We're going to have a demo account where you can start to, with pretend money, make investments and see what would happen. So when you're a little bit nervous and you don't want to risk real money, and you want to see, okay, what would happen if I, you know, I think this would be a good idea. What would happen if I did put £10 in this? And then you can see for free without, obviously if it works out and you make a load of money, you don't get that because it's all pretend. But yeah, it's a way for people to apply their bit of knowledge. So learn as you go. The demo account functionality should also be released pretty soon. Nice. And then we're going to go through adding more products on the comparison side of things. So putting more business models, putting more straightforward ways of comparing things.
I really love the demo product idea. I remember I've seen so many things like that. For example, for people who want to get into VCs, there is a new platform for that also, where you kind of fakely invest in startups and then you can follow your returns, your that you could have potentially have gotten if you had invested. And same with also the stock market. I've seen even competition when I was younger in school. I remember competition using this kind of product to kind of see if you had this amount of money and you invested it, can you be smart and make money out of it? So I think that's super interesting. Of course, it's also frustrating when at the end you could have made money and you didn't because you didn't really invest in the money, but that's really cool.
Yeah, it's for those, we set about thinking about for those people who are still a bit nervous, because obviously we're not telling you what to do. So there is that element of, okay, am I making the right choice? So that's why we're putting the demo account on,
We have a question right here, and I just want to finish wrapping up and getting to better understand the composition and the stage of the company before asking a question. But that's an interesting question, lactose intolerable. That's a very interesting question. I'll ask it straight away right after. And thanks for your follow on Twitch. So still talking about the company itself, what is the current composition of the team? How many people are part of the company right now?
So there is myself and my co-founder, and we work on it full time. And Alfonso would have loved to be here, but he can't. He's in Spain right now. So he's enjoying hopefully better weather than us.
Yeah, not sure about that, but hopefully, yeah.
So we've been working on it full time since May last year when we started, and then we've had a couple of people work for us in the interim and sort of on a ad hoc part-time kind of basis. So we've got somebody helping us out with marketing and somebody helping us out with a bit of design now and then.
Okay.
That's it. And my dog. The dog comes everywhere. Yes. She's in charge of, I don't know, PR or whatever. Everybody loves the dog.
Oh, yeah, that's a big role. I remember I've seen her, and yeah, everyone is like around. Oh, but that's a very cute dog, and everyone comes to you at events. Yeah. Every time I've been to an event with you, it was always like that. People coming and they're like, "What do you do?" But first, oh, let me pet your dog.
Yeah, yeah, pet the dog, and I'll just tell you. I'll talk at you while you pet the dog. Yeah.
That's a good tactic.
Yeah, she's my little secret weapon.
In terms of funding, have you been bootstrapping so far, or did you manage to get some external investment yet? Or is it maybe part of the plan for the coming year?
We are fundraising at the minute.
Okay.
So if anybody is really rich out there that wants to invest, let us know. So we're using, obviously, again, because I am an accountant, we're going through all of the lovely tax products like SEIS and EIS, and we've got the advanced assurance and everything. But we are fundraising right now. We've not done anything to date, so we've bootstrapped this far. But it is time now when we need to expand, do more marketing, do more, reach more people. So it's time to get a bit of money on board.
Yeah. Are you looking for angels or more traditional VCs?
I think angels would be great, but we're open. The thing is finding the right partner who gets what we're doing and who shares our vision with wanting to... Okay, so we're not like a sort of Uber, save the world kind of impact investment product, but we do have ethics and morals. And it's important that whoever comes on board with us shares those ethics and morals and understands what we're trying to achieve. So yeah, we're open to everybody as long as they fit with what we're trying to do.
You don't want to get someone on board and during the first few months having them saying, oh, you shouldn't really sell personal data because that would make more sense and makes more money.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We can't have an investor that's going to try and strong arm us into doing something like that. So yeah.
And also, we mentioned earlier that there are lots of new startups tackling financial wellness coming up, and I've seen actually so many pitching VCs over the past year. I'm wondering, even if you have very different approach, is there some kind of competition to talk to investors right now? And have you seen a crowd of startups in the same kind of environment pitching to VC recently?
I have seen a few. There's obviously quite a few out there. I think, as far as I'm concerned, nobody's tackling it in the way that we're doing it. People tend to either do the sort of educational side of it purely, or try to go very sophisticated, like with stock market news and things like that. So I don't think there's too much competition in the space where we're at, which is sort of being that sort of comparison engine and helping people understand their options. We're not too heavy on the education. I'm happy to leave that to all the amazing startups that are doing it because they're doing a wonderful job. So great, we'll leave that there and we'll pick up the sort of comparison bit. So I think that there's plenty of space for all of us. Somebody told me fintech was overly saturated. It was terrible idea. I thought, what rubbish. I mean, you know, it's how can it be overly saturated when we all have to use money? Yeah. And there's still all of these economic inequalities. So how can it be possibly oversaturated when there still exist these problems?
And I feel that everyone is trying to tackle something slightly different.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen many products and many startups that are very competitors, direct competitors.
Yeah.
Quite often you have lots of differences and also they're not necessarily targeting the same type of audience. So for sure, like many industries, when you have too many actors, it can be just harder to navigate, but I wouldn't say that it's completely saturated in a way that you don't have any room for any new innovation, because there are lots of way to innovate in fintech. I mean, it's huge. Fintech
absolutely.
Is
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's loads of different things that can be done. I mean, all the advances in technology, when you look at sort of AI and machine learning, it's able to do stuff now that we weren't even expecting 12 months ago. So,
yes.
Yeah, I'm totally up for more innovation.
And what about your own background, Anjani? You mentioned that you used to be an accountant. And work in accounting, but also an analyst at Citi.
Yeah.
So you have done lots of things.
Yeah.
But can you tell us a bit more about you, your own background, and who you decided to get started with Weebly?
Sure. Yeah. So I used to work in the Citi as a Citi analyst. Mm-hmm. So I used to look, used to deal with a lot of. So we worked in a stockbroker company and would deal with banks and institutions and say buy this, sell that. We all know what it's like. And then I left that and I trained as an accountant. And it was a lot nicer. It was also after the crash and there was not that many jobs going, so I had to be a bit creative.
Okay.
So I liked numbers and spreadsheets, so I trained as an accountant. And I worked in a big private hospital while I did that, which was lovely, because anybody that works in healthcare tends to be really, really genuine and open and want to help people. So it was a really lovely environment to work in. So I worked there for a while, and then I moved into tech because I was a bit, I don't know, I just had a lot of energy and I wanted to do stuff and I wanted to create and be in a more innovative environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved into tech, still staying in finance, still working as an accountant, and I was then head of finance and then CFO for a tech company, and I loved it, and I loved the sort of the, I love tech, I love it so much. Honestly, it's the people that you work with, it's yes. the people that you meet, it's very inspirational, it's very disruptive and very cool and very relaxed and friendly, so that was really nice, and it gave me then the sort of motivation
mm-hmm.
to go and do something myself. So yeah, so I did a little bit of extra studying because I left school at 16, so I went back and did an MBA and graduated, and then was all full of beans, so I was like, right, off I go into the world and I will conquer it. So yeah, so that's yeah, and then of course I got stuck because I can't code. So I was like, okay, great idea. I'll just park that one. And then I met my co-founder, and then it all unraveled then, because he was totally on the same page and he wanted to do something himself and he really loved the idea. So together we sort of reshaped it and mm-hmm. off we went, and Wheatley was born.
That's super cool. And he could code, so...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Really, really well.
I totally feel the pain when you have sometimes some idea, you want to do something, and you're just stuck on the technical aspect.
Yeah.
Just you're not able to make it. Or you can. Then you have lots of tools and lots of courses and things to learn how to code, but you only have the foundation. And if you want to do something slightly more complex, you really need to have someone who's done the job to actually make it and build it. So that's really cool. How did you meet him?
We worked together in our last job.
Okay.
So Alfonso and I worked together for about 18 months.
Okay.
And we used to have to travel extensively for work. So we got used to working together very closely. He was the CTO, I was the CFO. So we had to deal with a lot of daily operational mm-hmm. stuff. It was also a sort of startup scale up. Like, it was only a couple of years old. And so we went through the sort of growing pains of scaling a company up and understanding all the challenges. So we overcame a lot of that together, almost like a sort of practice run before we took the dive together to do this. So very useful.
It's super useful to have the opportunity to work with your co-founder before, so you know how they react when they're stressed, mm. how they operate, how they think on the day-to-day basis, and not just getting along with someone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was really, really essential that we had that, because now we have complete trust in each other and we know the way the other one would think or the way the other one would react. So, you know, Alfonso knows what I think before he needs to really ask me, you know, so it's great.
I'm actually going to ask the question from lactose intolerable that I've been keeping for after we have a better understanding of you and your own journey and the stage of the company. I didn't want to put the question in the middle of talking about the stage and then going back to it. But lactose intolerable ask if we have any tips for discovering interesting startups from a perspective of a graduate. So I guess when you want to get started in tech. And you're looking for your first job in tech, and the best way to find interesting startups.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm currently based in Google for Startups campus, which is jam-packed full of super interesting startups. But they're also very, very early stage, which means that they generally have very small budgets and can't afford to hire people. So it might be that you need to look a little bit further down the line, unless you are, you know, looking to join as a sort of co-founder or are okay with not getting paid very much. Google for Startups is a great place to look. There's also loads of online communities. So even if you're not based in London, you can jump on loads of online communities. I mean, there's the Google for Startups has a Slack channel that you can join anyway. Mm-hmm. So you can get on that. There's loads of specific channels for women, like we were talking about before we did this, like Alpha or Ada's List or these kind of places where you can. Femstreet is great, although it's now a premium product.
Yes, you have to pay now.
But for understanding the startup environment and who's doing what and how they're doing it. So, but yeah, I would say those are going to be very early stage startups that are probably still quite poor.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit further on is probably where they graduate into co-working spaces.
Right, yes, an accelerator program also further down the line. Yeah.
Yeah, normally they've got a little bit more money when they can afford to pay for premises.
I will also add to this that it's important to join the right startup. It's not just about, it's about finding interesting startups, but many startups can be interesting or not, depending on you and what you're looking for and what kind of role you're looking for also. If you're looking to learn like operational or gain some experience, or if you're looking for a very cool shiny line on your CV, you may not be looking for the same type of startup. And I think it's also because it's so you're working with very small teams and on a very small environment, it's kind of very demanding, and so it's important to find the people that works with you and that have this environment that works for you rather than just the idea. Sometimes you have some startups that may not be sexy on paper, but they are doing an amazing job. And even if those might not become the startup that you hear from on TechCrunch or other websites that cover maybe more sexier startups, you could still learn a lot or just have a big impact. So it really depends on your own objective, I would say.
Yeah, and I think one thing that we've learned from taking interns is that it's really hard to work in a startup. And when you're a founder, it's your baby, and so you're okay with not having evenings or weekends or holidays or a life.
Yes.
And you're okay with doing every job possible and just, you know, oh yes, I'll do that and I'll do that and I'll do that and I'll make the tea and I'll, you know, whatever. If you need to go out and leaflet, you'll do it. But it's one of those things where you have to be really proactive.
Yeah.
And I think when we've had interns who come, I think part of when you're an intern, you look to learn, and especially when you're a new graduate, you need to learn about how companies work.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard when you join a startup and you're thrown in at the deep end because the founders are super busy and just go, do something.
Yes.
And the graduates kind of turn around and go, do what? What should I do? How should I do it? It is difficult, and you've got to be really aware that that's the way life's going to be if you do join a startup, that you are going to have to wear all the hats all the time.
Yes.
And be very proactive and, you know, constantly, and be very scrappy as well. That kind of attitude of I'm just going to try this, I'm going to spend 10 minutes trying this, and I know what I want to get out of it, and if it doesn't work, I'm going to stop it and I'm going to learn from it, instead of spending, you know, 2 weeks planning something and a day implementing it, and then 3 weeks to watch the results. You can't do that.
Yeah, that's what might draw the line between a startup that works and a startup that fails. If you are too much into planning and you don't have feedback on what you're experimenting on fast enough, then you may miss something big, and the company might just depend on that.
Yeah. It needs to be really quick. So I remember we did have one intern who was really great, and he did some user testing for us. And I gave him a little bit of money, and he went out and bought some beers, because we were like, how can we get people to do user testing when we're really poor? So we thought beer was the cheapest incentive. And so he went out and offered a beer for 10 minutes of your time.
Mm-hmm.
And he got quite a lot of people.
Well, we're in London, so I have no doubt about that.
And then he took our CTO with him, who would sit there very quietly. And so when the users were saying, like, this doesn't work, that doesn't work, nobody really understood that Alfonso was sitting there, because they thought it was just a busy place.
Oh,
and Alfonso would just, and they'd be like, oh, how come that works now? And Alfonso would have fixed the issue or added that feature or, you know. And that was a really great way of, that was an afternoon of quite a lot of really great insight that we got. But that can be quite daunting to a graduate or somebody that's not ready to just dive in and experiment all over the place. So
I think it also brings the fact that you need to find, to be creative and to find creative way of doing things without having a big budget and a big plan. You need just to get things done right now. We need to do some things this afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, it has to be done by the end of the afternoon with really limited budgets. And I think it's at the end, you're really proud of yourself when you manage to get something done and, you know, with such a pressure, such a short timing and also very low budget. You'll find innovative way of looking at things, and that's what is super fascinating about startups also. Okay, continuing with the different questions I have also, you mentioned that you're based at Campus London, so in the Google campus, which is a very cool place. I really love the place. I go to lots of events there, even if I recently slowed down a bit on the events. And I'm wondering, has it really been super helpful for you to be surrounded by so many early stage startups? And is this something that you would recommend to people to just get a space in such a busy place?
Yeah, for me, I found it enormously useful because, well, it sort of, it helps you with the social aspect because it can be quite isolating sometimes being in a startup. So you have the interaction on the sort of personal side of things, you know, when it's difficult or when you're frustrated or whatever, having somebody there who is in the same boat as you, who, you know, there's somebody there, one other female founder who's incredible. And sometimes she will just like look at me and just go hard. And it's just like, go for it. Go and, you know, and it just sometimes it's that motivation when you're struggling
or
when you're tired. And also then there's times when you can celebrate with them. Like it was my birthday and everybody sat and had a piece of cake with me, which was really nice. Because you do that in an office. But when you're a startup, you don't have a big office of people. So there's the celebration of when things go well, when you have successes at work, when you have, you know, when you go and you talk to a really big partner and you can go in, and I skipped into campus that day and I was like, guys, it's amazing. Yeah, it was really, it's just the emotional side of things. But also then there's the other side of things, there's the business and the technical side. So if you're stuck on something, you've got a room full of developers who can help you solve that. If you need an introduction to somebody, there's somebody who'll know that person. You can ask for skill sets. You can ask for introductions to contractors or stuff like that. Like if you need a design person or something, you can say, hey, does anybody know anyone that's good? Can anybody recommend a good lawyer or something like that? And you've got that community to bounce those ideas off, even if it's just from a virtual point of view. So even if you're just joining a Slack channel and you're based in the middle of nowhere, you can still be part of that. I think having that, being in the community is really, really, really important. I'd say definitely if you can go to a physical place, if it works for you. I really like going to a physical place, but I appreciate it's not for everybody. Some people like quietness. But also, most people understand, you know, when you're open for talking, when you're not.
Yes, at the limit when you're in a busy space, an open space like that, yeah.
Yeah, some people will, you know, when you've got headphones on, generally don't disturb people. So I never wear headphones, so I'm always, you know, I'm always open for a chat, but that's just me. But yeah, it can be, it can be quite difficult to get into the physical spaces, I think, sometimes. I know campus can be a little restrictive with their admissions and vetting people. And a lot of people don't manage to get accepted to get a free... because it's a free place. So that's also important.
They also run programs like a semi-accelerator or things like that. Have you been to one of those? Have you been a part of one of their programs or not at all?
I've been involved with quite a few things they've done.
Okay.
But we haven't joined one of the residencies yet, no.
Okay.
From what I understand, they're just based on a higher floor and there's not very many people up there. I quite like being down in the mix of everyone. So yeah, I've been up to visit them a few times. I'm like, why do you want to sit in this in this office by yourself?
I think they also have very targeted programs. So I think they had one over the summer for women entrepreneurs. There is one coming for social impact. So it's also very specific. So sometimes you just don't fit at the right date at the right time. Also, talking about that, I came across one of your quotes on Sifted, and I wanted to ask you about it. So you've been quoted on this online publication called Sifted. And you said several women who have fundraised have put a male name on the email, and I'm ashamed to say that it seems to work.
Yeah, so this is something, so I was doing a little bit of research into, you know, how other people, how successful women have fundraised. And I was looking at all different routes because, you know, the statistics say that only 2% of women get funded.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, let's find those 2% and ask them how they did it. And a few of them, the first one that I went to see, I sat down and the first thing she said to me, well, it's about men. And I thought, oh God, where's she going with this? And she said, yeah, I basically had to put a male name on the email and shove a male colleague in fundraising, even though I'm the CEO, the business is all wrapped around me. But the same investors who ignored her emails when she wrote it from herself would reply if she changed the name on it.
It's
terrible, isn't it? And I didn't know how to take it. She did say that she found success with Scandi investors because I think in Scandinavia they're much more forward with equality and gender issues and stuff like that. So they're not that bothered about male or female. Whereas she did struggle in the UK. And I've heard it from other women who... I spoke to a woman who successfully raised and she said, yeah, it worked for her too, to put her technical co-founder's name on an email and it got a response. And the bizarre thing was, one that she showed me an example, it was from a woman.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. I haven't got to that level yet, but I think also that if a person isn't willing to invest in you, then they're probably not the right fit.
Do you really want to work with someone who will do such discrimination? But at the same time, sometimes it's also not... it's not conscious also. So it could be an unconscious bias, and that doesn't mean that the person is evil. But at the same time, like, there is something wrong here. And in the system, there are many new initiatives coming up and new things, but things take really lots of time to change, and it's really too slow. Do you think that... For you being a woman, especially in the fintech space, do you feel that it is especially harder for you to stand, even if you haven't had this kind of issue yet, and are just starting talking to investors? Do you feel that you have seen some resistance in the fintech space because you're a woman leading the company?
Yeah, I think it's a really crazy thing. I actually did a talk at the Shard about being a female leader in fintech because it's... You know, both in finance and technology, women are not.
Yes.
it's not a traditional female field. And it's weird because I've never felt those issues. You know, when I worked in a tech company, I worked in two tech companies, and both of them were completely sort of blind gender. Yep. Both of them were really just, you know, whoever does the job best, that's it. And it's nothing further than that. So I... almost wasn't aware. And then you know, yes, finance, especially the city, okay, the city is very sexist, it is. I'd like to hear somebody tell me it's not. But tech isn't, so I haven't. And then when you're talking to sort of investors and stuff, I think the world is changing very slowly, but I don't think fintech is particularly hindered.
Okay.
I think the world of, you know, the city and the brokerage firms, they're still in the dark ages. But I think the tech world's a bit cooler than that. I think there is still issues, obviously, with the 2%. I don't know where that comes from or what the solution is. I hope it changes because there's so many cool founders that I've met that are from underrepresented groups, be they, you know, sexuality or ethnicity or... you know, whatever. the coolest founders that I've met have all been underrepresented. So it needs to change.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm really glad to see initiatives tackling these kind of issues, but in the same time, you want the entire space to change and not necessarily to have to go through a specific VC, you know, the one or two VCs that are officially investing in your own minority to be able to get funding. You know, you want to be able to talk to a broader audience and not just to be stuck in your own box. You actually want to break the boxes.
Yeah, and I think the competition is so high when you are underrepresented because, you know, if you're an average, you know, traditional sort of white straight male from a privileged background and blah blah blah, then you have 96% or 98% that's going to invest in you, lucky you. And then the rest of us, you know, all have to fight for that tiny 2%. And it's sort of like, okay, so we've got amazing people. You can't just be average. If you are underrepresented, you have to be really, really like amazing. And then you find the amazing ones. And they still can't get investment, so...
Well, they're too bossy. You know, if you're amazing and if you're really fighting and hustling, then people say that you're too bossy or you're too this or you're too that. So maybe. There is always something.
Yeah.
And Lisa is right, that's so sad. Yeah, that's sad and shocking and that's a word. It's... But we are here, so that shows that, you know, that doesn't mean that women or underrepresented groups are giving up. That just means that we are still fighting and just have to fight more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is still space. I think one of our strengths is that we are fighting to serve the underserved. We're helping people who are not from that traditional group that has access to all that financial knowledge. I mean, I spoke to a girl who she is in a very senior position in a very big tech company who you would think has it all sorted, making loads of money. And she was like, well, you know, my brother knows how to do all of this because all his friends at school taught him how to do all this. And I literally don't know where to start. And I don't know, I just don't know any of it. And you see these sort of issues where it's just crazy.
Yeah.
So seeing as we are maybe not the norm when it comes to talking about finances, well, maybe that means we understand where you're coming from and we're here for you.
I think the fact that you mentioned that people may think that when you are working in a bigger company, lots of things may already be sorted out, and that's not the case. I think that's something that can rely on many other things. Like you can see that on HR, on you know, on communication, on many things, on many processes, other than finances. And I think it's also due to the fact that startups are actually more flexible. And if there is something new coming up, they can actually learn how it works and adopt it really quickly.
Yeah.
While with bigger corporation, as you said, you don't know where to start. You have so many steps to change to actually adopt a new process or something new.
Yeah.
That you need to convince lots of people to write reports, and by the time you can actually start doing anything, a year happened and you didn't have the time to implement any new changes.
Yeah.
That's quite long. And that's why I also love startups. As soon as you want to do something, well, just do it and
you're
done. Well, but I really appreciate your feedback on all those different aspects. Do you have any other tips or recommendation for aspiring founders that may want to get started, maybe disrupting their own industry or changing things in bigger corporation or in traditional spaces?
I would say joining a community is important. And one of the main things is you skip a lot of mistakes. So you can ask for help for people. Just if you want to do something, go and ask somebody who's a little bit further on for, you know, 15 minutes of their time and say, where do I start? Because even things like copyrights or trademarks or different free tips. So all the free tools that there are out there to get you, you know, 10 steps ahead. Just go and ask somebody. Go and ask, how did you do this? What did you do? Have you done this? You know, and it's the people saying, oh, sign up for this or sign up for that and you get free credits on this or you get 6 months free of that. And then you're able to do these things very quickly and you find out about services that are actually really important later on. And if you don't have your, you know, when you're incorporating a company, if you don't get your split rights and you don't issue enough shares, you have to go and do a share split later on. So why not just ask somebody before you incorporate for some tips, and they'll tell you, and you get everything, you're already 10 steps ahead.
Huge thanks to Leona for joining me on the stream today, the first stream of 2020. And thanks to all of you for listening to Entrepreneurs Playing Games podcast edition. For my part, you can find me on Twitter at AmandineFlax, and be sure to check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/AmandineFlax for the full video version of our discussion and much more. Also, if you want to join the live stream and ask your own questions to our next guest, Entrepreneurs Playing Games is taking place every 2 weeks on Saturday morning, so keep an eye on our social media, and I hope to see you there very soon!